10 to 1, episode 182.
Top 14 books from these 14 books from the book poster of books.
Welcome to 10 to 1, a podcast where we make top 10 lists about everything.
Or 14 lists in this case. Welcome to 10 to 1, Brian. Good to have you on.
Cool. Thanks for hosting me, since I still cannot get various technical questions answered on my side.
Someday.
This time someday I think it was your fault.
Sit down and it's going to be smooth.
Yeah.
All right, we've been trying to get this out since we did our prologue to this episode, but back in October of 2022, we released at the Sci-Fi Christian feed episode 1068, top 12 book poster books so far. And it took us 2 years to do, well, really, we're just trying to do 10 more, but along the way, we may do a few extras.
Slip in.
So 2 full years to do just 10.
Most of that was Infinite Jest, though.
Yeah, the last 1 year was Infinite Jest.
Yes.
So, Brian, why don't you tell your listeners who don't know us what the book poster books are, and then we'll. Let's just give all the same facts we gave at the beginning of episode, or this first episode we did, which for us again was 1068.
Yeah. No, if you don't know what this is, you're probably not going to be, you don't need any intro. It's too late.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about 14 good books, or more or less, and all spoilers. I think this might be rated PG, so if my mom's listening, you might need to skip when we get to certain books.
PG.
Yes.
We can talk about it in PG ways, right?
PG 13, maybe.
I'll do my best.
Do you know the alternate?
It's not my specialty, but I'll do my best.
Do you know the original title for Tropic of Cancer?
I do not.
I think we talked about it.
Okay.
When you say it, I'll remember.
It's a hard PG 13 this episode. It's going to have moments. So,
listeners, be careful.
Okay. So, you know, there you go. If you want to listen to us talk about books, keep listening.
Yeah, so as we review these books, listeners, we're not going to do as we give this list of, sorry Ben, don't distract me, don't show me the all right, fine, okay, he's now showing me the original title. I don't think you should bring that up, Brian. They can Google it. So
it's funny, it did come up when I googled it. I must have
of these books over on the Sci-Fi Christian Extra, which you can find at patreon.com/thesci-fi-christian. So we're not going to do reviews here. We're just strictly ranking the books.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
We'll talk about them a little.
Yeah. Right. So if you want to know when we ever talked about these, it was over on the extra feed. But here we're just going to tell you about the books that we read over the last 2 years. So, Brian, last time we started oldest to youngest, do you want to go youngest to oldest?
Well, should we just have general thoughts on the slate before we just dive right in?
Well, I think also we should, in addition to Ben trying to get Matt to grow a beard, last time we did this, it was also, well, maybe it wasn't this last one, but we did podcast last U.S. election day. As we're recording, what? That's tomorrow. Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
It's
what crazy. Was it? What did we do?
I didn't go back
4 years ago.
Yeah, I didn't go back and check what episode it was. I guess I could do that really quickly.
Oh, we never closed the circle on this beard situation. So yes, on that episode that I keep mentioning, episode 1068. You two are trying to convince me to grow a beard. And in my mind, I can tell from what I'm saying, I'm just appeasing you. Like, okay, I'll think about it. But I know
what that means when you say you'll think about it.
I'm not going to grow a beard. This is in 2022. Mm. Then flash forward to fall 2023. My wife says, I think I'd like to see what you look like with a beard. And thus, my beard. I just needed her to want it. She didn't want it earlier. She previously wanted to be clean shaven. But now that she wants me with a beard it is. So what I was going to do, like I keep mentioning, shave this week. Go to my conference and then just like keep on growing. No shave November.
Mm. Yeah, I think you should just leave it.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to shave it, but I like what I like your thoughts.
Yeah, I trust me on this. When are my business instincts wrong?
You do have good business instincts.
I do. I've given business advice on this show.
Business advice for beards.
Yeah. So I would leave it. I think this.
Wow.
This would be a tactical error.
Wow. I'm just shocked. I can still like. Clean up around
you
the goatee.
You can clean
right?
it up. Yeah, I would clean it up
so
a little bit.
Keep the goatee, but shave the sides that don't grow in
exactly.
so well.
Exactly. That's what I would do.
Yeah, so that's why I was complimenting Brian so much. I have patchy sides where I would love a full beard. Brian, what a great beard.
Well, thank you.
Brian, did you have a beard when we saw you last? I don't remember you having a beard.
No, I'm usually about November to March, November to Easter, maybe. Beard okay. wearer. And I was just noticing it was a little less patchy this year than the previous years, so it's just going to have to grow into it, Matt.
All right. Oh, you liked it this year when you saw me?
Yes. Yeah, it looked really good.
Well, last year when you saw it, it was brand new. This year, yeah, you had a year of growth. Yeah.
Yep, I'm glad you kept
it. Like in 2025.
Robert E. Lee, probably Civil War general.
All right. Well, Ben, what kind of thoughts did you want to give on this overall list of 14 books?
Well, we were texting about it a little bit last night, and I have to say, this is a very difficult list to make because I think this is a considerably stronger slate of books than we had last time around, especially in the top half. I think there are some excellent books in here, and even of the ones in my bottom half, there's some really good stuff. And there's only one or two that I wasn't a huge fan of. So I think this is the book poster is really hitting its stride.
I feel like I've read so many great books thanks to you and this gift. This book poster was a gift for Christmas, I believe, and also just a gift to my life.
Yeah.
Because you've been exposing me to these books I would have never checked out. Of course, there's going to be some misses, but mostly hits.
Mostly hits. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Brian?
I think I agree, and I'm curious how close our rankings are going to be. I think we might have more disagreement than last year, but like you said,
I think
when you've got 10-ish really good books, the ranking is fun, but we're not saying they're bad.
I predict that Brian and Ben have a lot of overlap and that I'm the opposite of almost everyone, except for our number one. I bet we have the same number one.
I'd be willing to bet we don't.
Okay.
I think we have three different number ones. Oh, man, I swallowed something.
So how we did it last time, listeners, is we went in a certain order, like I said, oldest to youngest, and then that person just said their number, in this case 14, and then we all talked about that book, so we're not going to keep coming back.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so we will say, oh, I had that book at number 2. You have it at 14? You're crazy. And then we fight.
Should we say where we have it? Should we just talk about it?
So here's what I want to do. I want to try something a little different. Let's wait to talk about it until everybody's mentioned it on their list. And then whoever has it highest can defend it first or talk about it first. If somebody has something much higher.
Okay, I love that idea.
That's great.
I think, I don't know who's the youngest between you two. I'm the oldest, obviously.
But I'm 39.
I'm 35.
All right, Brian, you start. What's your number 14?
All right, my number 14 is Tropic of Cancer.
What? Wow. Is it because of how vulgar it is?
So we're going to talk about it when everyone's mentioned it.
Yeah, what a miss on your part, Brian. Wow.
I'm actually surprised because even though it's dirty, there were parts that were very good.
It's profound.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
All right. My number 14 is Mrs. Dalloway.
We are not going to be in agreement because my number 14 is The Sound and the Fury. All right, so now we just go through again.
All right, so yeah, it's like a game of chicken. I kind of there's tension building.
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, and I'm going to try and keep track of them as we mention them. My number 13 is Mrs. My number 13 is it 13? Did we say top 14?
Yeah.
My 13 is Mrs. Dalloway.
Okay, we're getting closer. But
my number 13, The Adventures of Augie March.
My number 13 is going to just blow your mind. Ben, this is the most mad he's going to be of the whole
evening. You're about to say Blood Meridian, aren't you?
I did not enjoy Blood Meridian.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. He's pushing himself away from the table.
Worst take I've heard from you in a long time. Let me just say, it's going to be a while before we discuss Blood Meridian. Yeah. So it's the meantime to tide us over. What a horrible take. What an awful take.
This is Ben's number one, I think. And I just made it my second.
I was disgusted with Brian a minute ago. And now that disgust has been eclipsed. Go on, Brian. We have nothing to talk about yet.
That's true. So this would be a bad place for me to put Blood Meridian, I guess.
Yeah, reshuffle your list.
Do it, Brian.
No, my number 12 is The Adventures of Augie March. So we've got two on that one, right?
Mrs. Dalloway and Augie March are both on deck. Yep. Waiting for Matt, I think, on both of them.
That's right.
What's your number 12?
All right, Ben.
Number 12, The Lord of the Flies.
All right, and my number 12 is The Adventures of Augie March. Take it away, Brian.
Well, you get to talk about it first, Matt, because you have it the highest. Oh, wait, we both have it here. You're right.
At 12.
I didn't feel strongly either way about this book for a really long meandering book.
I didn't dislike it.
Yeah.
It was fine.
It never clicked.
Yeah. It was aight, as the kids would say.
Which, I don't know, like the 1950s is, I mean, it's Lord of the Rings, Ray Bradbury, Canticle for Leibowitz. It's a pretty sparse decade for books that I've enjoyed, at least. So I don't know, maybe it's just the time.
Did I share my misunderstanding of this book when we reviewed it, how I thought it was a African-American book? I was very confused. Because I went into it thinking that it was like a African-American literature, and then he starts talking about his Russian-Jewish grandma. I was like, well, how does that fit?
So for the first, expectations.
For the first hour or so of the audiobook, I was extremely confused. That's not why I didn't dislike it. I think the only book on here I disliked was Mrs. Dalloway.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what did you think of it, Matt?
It's just so hard to get into, so hard to finish. I would set this aside for days. I don't want to say months, but lengthy periods of time. And then eventually we had to review it, so I just plowed through it at the end. But I never wanted... It was a book that I could put down and never want to get back to.
All right. I think we all agree. Well, you actually sound the most negative on it, even though you had it one higher than me. But I think we all agree, not our favorite.
Yeah.
All right, number 11, Brian.
All right, my number 11 is The Lord of the Flies.
Oh, that one's on deck. And also going on deck, The Sound and the Fury.
Nice. And I'm ready to pull the trigger on this one so the three of us can discuss Mrs. Dalloway. This consensus is really helping. Mm. I like how we're doing this.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of tension.
Mm-hmm. So who had it highest? Me.
You did, Matt.
All right. So I thought this book actually started out pretty good. I liked the setting. I liked the tone. I liked how it was written. But then as it went on, I found myself less and less interested in the characters and what was happening with their lives. I think there were some cases where you may remember that the characters were sort of reminiscing on their past, like looking back on their memories and just thinking of their life choices. And, I think we can all relate to those kind of feelings, but not necessarily nostalgia, but just kind of, wondering about the different choices in your life. So I think there were parts that were moving, but I can see from my review that I was torn between 3.5 and 4. And when I say that, I almost always round up. But wait a second. No, in this case, I might have ranked this a little bit too low. It looks like I did round up. Wow, round up. So I gave this 4 stars, actually. But I was torn. It was not great. But looks like from my review,
I love how your rating scale starts at not great 4 stars.
I know, isn't that interesting?
I think it's not like an interesting thing. I think it's an indictment on how you rate stuff.
I think when I first was looking at this, I thought this is a for sure 3.5. Like when I have like a mixed review,
Goodreads doesn't allow for the half.
I know, that's what I'm saying. So when I was just thinking about this book, I thought mixed feelings towards it, but some good things. I bet it's a 3.5, but I gave it a low 4. So that's a surprise.
I'm not a big fan.
I think it's an indictment on star ratings in general.
Yeah, I still like them, Brian, but I do understand your perspective, and I'm closer to it than I used to be.
Ah, good to hear. I won't peer pressure, Matt.
Anything about Mrs.
Dalloway? That was something else you said last time, Matt. You bucked against peer pressure.
Oh, yeah, we were pressuring you to stop doing star ratings.
It was peer pressure for beards last time.
It worked.
So,
you have any Dalloway thoughts, Brian?
I have a hard time putting into words why I didn't really like it, because everything that I could come up with of a description, I could think of a time where I do like a book like that. Like it's really slow, but there are books I like that are really slow. Nothing really happens until the very end, but there's lots of books like that that are good. Yeah. I don't know. I think maybe I'm out on stream of consciousness. And
I'm with you on that. I'm very selective. There are instances where it works, but this is not one of them for me.
Yeah, I think it worked best for the character that's a shell shock victim. So, like, I'm not gonna say it's not a valid choice ever, but I don't know. You're trying to go for realism, but there's no, like, art is not. You can't go all the way with realism. That's not possible. And it wouldn't be interesting, I guess, if you could. So, I don't know.
You know, I decided to just do a quick check because I didn't read my review very closely. I just was going a little bit off the top of my head, and then I had my review up. I think I might have liked this a little bit more than I thought. I you know, sometimes you remember a book less fondly than you gave it. My initial review was a little bit positive with some. I kind of summed up by saying I had a lot of mixed feelings about it, but in hindsight, I think I feel less fondly, even though at the time it looked like I liked it. I'm looking at my whole list. I have nothing lower. Everything going forward is 4 stars or higher. So that's pretty good. I mean, it is a top 100 novel, so.
Well, who's afraid of a Virginia Woolf? The three of us. Did you do the thing where you just, like, arranged your books, these 14 books, based on what star rating you got them? I hope you didn't.
I did, of course. That's the only way I can do it. But let's say there's, like, 5 books with 4 stars. Then I had to think, well, which one do I like better? See? All right, let's move on. Brian, let's do your number 10.
Yeah, I guess we are a number 10. All right. My number 10. And I think I should say here, well, I'll just say my number 10 is Blood Meridian.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you, Brian. So, it's not
I'm
that
ashamed
good.
Of you too.
We'll talk it's about not that good. Hey. I'm not going to we can talk about that. We'll talk about it when we get there. I'm not going to say I got something when I didn't get it. But I'm not But that doesn't mean that it's
a problem with the book. There's a big difference between what you're saying and what Brian's saying.
Oh, I just don't like it.
I'm not saying it's a problem
Brian's
with the book.
Brian's saying I didn't get it.
Yeah.
You're saying I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Very different.
Maybe I didn't like it and I didn't get it.
Which I think...
yes.
Have you guys read... Quick side note. Have you guys read C.S. Lewis's Experiment in Criticism?
No.
I don't think I've read that.
It's a slam dunk. You guys have to read this one. It's C.S. Lewis, literary criticism. It's like 120 pages. It might be the best nonfiction that he wrote. It's super interesting. And you guys are always rating stuff and talking about art and our relationship to it. And I think it really fits in well with conversations you guys have had.
I do love C.S. Lewis's literary criticism, and I agree it tends to be. I'm just looking it up here. Nope, an expert. I have not read it.
Okay.
Yeah, it always. So I went to the University of Minnesota for my undergrad, and had read, you know, Narnia, and at that point, a fair bit of C.S. Lewis's apologetics. I get into my English history class, and my, you know, atheist professor is quoting C.S. Lewis, but from a literary criticism perspective, because that's what his main thing was. Like, we know him as the children's fantasy author, and then
Mere Christianity,
and then the apologetics. Neither of those were what he actually did.
Yeah,
like those were side things. He was a literary critic, and he was brilliant at it.
All right, you're number 10.
Great Gatsby.
My number 10 is Tropic of Cancer.
All right.
Nothing comes off the board.
So then we're up to my number 9, which is The Sound and the Fury. And are we...
Okay, yeah, there we go.
All right, let's talk about this horrible book. Just kidding. I don't remember if it's horrible, but I'll load up my review and see what we thought. Who has the highest? Brian.
See, this is the problem. You're like outsourcing your opinions to your knee-jerk past self. It's not even your past self after consideration. It's the past self immediately after finishing the book.
But do let me say this. If I don't really remember it today, the only opinion I can give is what I originally thought. So I have
but
to
that
look,
doesn't apply in every case.
So I have to look back at May 2023 to see what did I feel then.
So
that doesn't apply in every case, though. Like Mrs. Dalloway. Anyway, go on,
all right,
Brian.
Go ahead, Brian.
So, and here's something I learned recently. When you were a medieval scholar, say, reading books, they would not say they had read a book or read a work until they could close their eyes and walk through the entire thing. So, like, reading it is not just, like, you listen to it, the audiobook once, or you read the paper book once. Like, if you don't remember anything about it a year later, then I'm not sure.
I'm the only one who's read Blood Meridian out of this group, but go on. We'll get to that.
Ben is nodding his head as if he totally agrees with this, and there's no way that that's true for you for these, all the books you have.
I can like a thought without living it out. I'm allowed a little hypocrisy.
Yeah. So I have The Sound and the Fury highest. I got to the end and I did not know what to think about it. One of the few times I didn't write anything. I didn't write anything on Goodreads. I kept typing things out and deleting them. And I was really looking forward to you guys talking about it on your extra feed. And then this is the one time I've been really disappointed in the book poster episodes. It was like a 10-minute episode where I think you read it like 6 months apart. Ben didn't remember anything about it.
Years ago. Yes. And I didn't like it enough to reread it.
Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah, not make for a great conversation.
So we're really relying on your analysis to come through.
I can see from my Goodreads review that I had a similar feeling as Brian. I had a hard time knowing what to say about it. So I just mentioned that you told me feel free to spoil yourself and read the Wikipedia article, and that will help me understand the book's plot and narrative style. And while that did help me in general, the extra knowledge did not help me get into the book. I felt poorly towards this book. This was my least favorite book of the whole list we're talking about
today.
Yeah, I remember liking it, but not loving it. I have recently read As I Lay Dying by Faulkner, and I enjoyed that quite a bit more. It is, you know, like straight misery porn.
Mm. So sorry.
Anything else?
I don't think I have any deep thoughts for The Sound and the Fury.
All right, my number 9 was Wuthering Heights, which I liked. It's fine. Didn't love, but it's good.
You liked it the least.
Yeah. Unless Matt comes out with it at number 9.
Matt?
I did not. Nope, it's higher for me. Oh, I guess I should give you my number 9.
This is my turn.
So I think that you guys will both be surprised and not surprised at this one. Infinite Jest.
A little disappointed, but not surprised.
Thank you.
Not surprised.
That's all I wanted is not surprised.
Be a while before we get to that one, too.
I think for you, that's your number 2. That's my guess. We'll Blood see. Meridian and then Infinite Jest. All right, Brian.
What do you think my number 3 is?
Heart of the Matter.
Mm.
4.
Oh, it's not just like, I just see it by the name. Heart of Darkness is your number 4.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I'm doing pretty
good. Probably.
And your number 5
is a solid top. These top ones.
I know you did.
All right, let's keep going so we can get solid.
There. Did I know your number 5 or your top 5?
I will say you don't have the order right.
Well, then the only thing I did wrong is Heart of Darkness and Heart of the Matter.
We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. All right. 8, Brian.
You got your hearts in the wrong place. Mine 8.
Yes. Oh, I love it.
My 8's The Great Gatsby, which I'd never read in high school.
I dropped that one.
I have not.
Okay, so we'll wait on that. My 8, and let me be clear, from 8 up, I love all of these books. So everything below it, I like them. I think the only one I didn't like was Mrs. Dalloway, but the other ones, I like them all. I love 8 and up. So To Kill a Mockingbird, my great transformation from a book that I did not like at all to really, really loved.
Well, for the second time tonight, Brian and I are on the exact same page because my number 8 is The Great Gatsby.
All right.
Brian, take it away.
No, Matt, you tell us this time.
Well, I first read this book in junior high, possibly high school. If I was just to guess, I'd say 9th grade, but who knows? But it's last year was my first time reading it since then. And yeah, I guess all I can say is, it's a well-known story. I enjoyed it. Just as a personal note, they reference Minnesota multiple times, which is where I'm from. So I like that.
Me too.
Yes. I you know, sometimes we read books where it's like, I have no idea what's going on, and that makes me frustrated. Well, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, because I think Ben likes things that are like more layered and maybe hard to follow. This was pretty straightforward, and so I like the accessibility.
All right. Even though it's kind of a twist ending.
I don't even remember the twist ending at this point.
Well, it turns out he wasn't rich.
Oh.
Right. Still great. Yeah, not the rich Gatsby.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I would call the great Gatsby the pretty good Gatsby.
Yeah, it's fairly spot. Good.
Yeah. Fairly good. It is one of those books that I think has an inflated reputation due to it being a high school favorite.
Yeah, I think I could see that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it is an easy read, but has, like, it's not, it's good. It's good. Like, this is the kind of book probably to give a public school high schooler.
A really good Gatsby.
He's crying hard.
It's sort of
I like how you dropped the public school in there. Like, my homeschooled teenagers are reading Homer.
Right.
This is the public school version.
Right.
Of what teenagers
can read. I was about to say, it is kind of it's a little Greek tragedy. Kind of the guy tries to get the girl. Everyone dies at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's
pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. All right, 7.
My 7 is Wuthering Heights.
All right.
And you've already said that, right, Ben?
I have.
All right.
And so have you, Matt, so we can...
No,
he has not.
Oh, you're right. I messed up my numbers.
Don't worry. All right, Ben, what's your number 7?
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
All right, and for me, for the first time tonight, Ben and I are on the same page. My number 7 is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
It's so good.
All
right. So good.
I'm a little bit higher on that one.
All right.
Go to your number 6.
We got
to
keep going. Number 6, Heart of Darkness.
Oh.
I think number 6.
I think I'm the first one to mention Heart of Darkness.
You are. I didn't think you liked Heart of Darkness, Matt.
We'll have to talk about it when we get there.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually shocked.
I didn't like it the first time.
And proud.
Don't be too proud.
You just didn't like very many of these books. My number 6, Tropic of Cancer.
Wow.
A book I loved on so many levels. The first level being, I have a dirty mind. The second level being, I like to horrify Matt. The third level being, this is actually a really profound and moving book. Well, I loved it.
Go ahead, Brian. At this point, before I say my number...
Well, we've all three of us.
Tropic of Cancer, yep. So we're discussing
that. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So I still have to say my number 7, but before we say...
Hold off. Yeah, we're...
Yes. We're at six, right?
Yep.
All right. Yes. Brian, you do Tropic of Cancer first, and I'll get my review ready.
So this was at the bottom of my list. I mean, yes, I was put off by some of the scenes. Although you read the worst of them, I think, Ben, on your...
Well, didn't you laugh? Like, don't you have like a 12-year-old boy inside you that just thought that was delightful?
This is the only review we had to put on the uncensored feed. Everything else on the extra feed.
But I mean, that didn't. It's not bad art because of stuff like that. But I can't find anyone to tell me anything about Tropic of Cancer that's not. It's been banned because it's, or, you know, people will talk about banning. Don't care about that. Although, yeah, set that aside. It's really explicit. And number 2, people will say, well, it's really beautiful writing.
Well, I think I know that's deep. Not a true statement because I said quite a bit more than that in our review.
But you really, there's no examples. You can't tell me anything right now about it.
Yes, I can.
Tell me something.
So, Tropic of Cancer is about the failure of modernism. It is about the modernism has stripped all the meaning out of life, and they're left with a void, which is the search for fulfillment and sexuality, but without actually finding it there. It's about facing the nihilism of valueless modernism and realizing what you've done to yourself.
I mean, do you need 800 pages of wandering around Paris, dirty?
Well, you don't need any of that
to get that.
Like, so once there was this short guy called a hobbit, and he took the ring to Mordor and threw it in. The end. Fair. I just did Lord of the Rings in like 10 words. You don't need any of it.
So when I read this, it was a year after I read On the Road by Jack Kerouac. And this writing style really reminded me of that stream of consciousness, which I really like. But I hear you saying, Brian, that that's not something you enjoy. So maybe that was one thing that maybe a check against it. Would you say that's true?
Yes. I mean, again, like I liked Sound and the Fury better. I didn't really like Mrs. Dalloway much better. Yeah, so that is a check against it, I guess. But
I think if I remember correctly, there was obviously graphic material, but it was more towards the beginning of the book, and it reminded me
kind of a letdown, honestly, because I was hoping for way more.
It reminded me of Ben talked about this. I think it's a Tarkovsky film that just has some purposely boring material that the director is wanting people that aren't like true film lovers to leave. So he's trying to weed people out. So in the same way, I kind of thought, is it possible this author is just trying to scare people away to see who can get through this early section that is very sexually explicit? And then you get into it, and I'm shocked to find, because Ben did warn me about how this was going to go, I'm shocked to find it's poetic. So you said that you can't just say it's beautiful writing. I did find parts of it beautiful, although we have to warn the listeners, graphic. So explicit in the early parts.
I just remember my delight when I started to think of you reading these passages and being horrified. I honestly wanted to just not warn you.
You did warn me.
Because I wanted to be there when you found out.
You should have done a live reading for me on the Uncensored
page. Yeah, I really should have.
Yeah. No, this seemed to me like this seemed to me like the experiments where like people urinate on something and hang it up in a museum and say it's art.
I profoundly disagree.
Does it say something? Sure. It's not art, though. So I don't know. I think this one might not be good.
Oh, up disagree, to 14. Ryan.
Okay. All right.
All right. Matt, you have to do your number 6.
Yes, I'm glad that you remembered, because it's another one that we're going to be able to discuss all together. Number 6 for me, Wuthering Heights. And I'm the highest, right?
The highest.
Can I start this one?
You can.
All right. Well, I think this is a case of sometimes when you're having a hard time following a narrative, because this story has multiple generations of characters all wrapped up in the story and the drama. And I believe some of the characters have the same name. Does that ring a bell? I think like a baby has the name of a character who died.
Oh, yeah.
But and so even though there's like, I talked earlier about how sometimes narratives can be hard to follow. This one was a little bit hard, but you're still really into it the whole time. I didn't say this about a lot of the books in the list, but this is one I wrote down that I would like to see myself revisiting in the future.
It's getting adapted into a movie again. I mean, it's been several times.
I've never seen a film of it. Have you?
No. No. Except for the Monty Python sketch, Wuthering Heights, via Semaphore. Do you know what semaphores are?
No.
They're like the flags.
Okay.
You like signal each other. It's probably better seen than described.
I'll give one last thought and then throw it to someone else. But I think the strongest part of this book is the characters. Great character creation. I don't want to say character development, although that might be true. I just want to say she created great characters for the narrative.
Yeah.
Well, who wants to go next?
I don't think I have anything to add, honestly. It's pretty good.
This is the one that I had read a couple years before and didn't reread for the episode. So it's been 4 years now. It's pretty good. I liked it. It's very melodramatic. This is maybe where it gets hard with a book like this, because I liked Wuthering Heights, even though long portions are boring. It's really long, so I can't say that's why I don't like Sound and the Fury or Augie March. You can tell sometimes she's just kind of going for a mood more and just kind of like writing large portions to, I don't know. So I don't know. I don't know why some of them work for me and some of them don't. It's probably my fault.
So before we enter the top 5, there are 2 books that none of us have listed. They are Tristram Shandy and The Fart of the Matter. So pretty exciting to get to both of those.
Why'd you say it like that? You know, it's such a great book. Why do you think that's so funny? It's not even that funny.
Why are we laughing about it?
I think you're laughing.
Okay. Well, and yeah, so we'll see what my top five is, but you came pretty close to nailing it. All right, Brian, number five.
All right, so my number five is going to be Infinite Jest.
All right.
Way higher than I expected.
My number five, which I don't think Matt has mentioned yet, Heart of Darkness.
I haven't mentioned it yet.
Oh my gosh. You really liked Heart of Darkness. I guess that, wow, that deep dive worked.
Wow.
And number five, I think this is it now for this book. Have we all mentioned Lord of the Flies?
Yes.
Yes.
Holy, Lord of the Flies this high?
I'm judging.
I am that's what we're here to do, is judge each other and these books. This is a judgmental, this is not a judgment-free zone. This is a judgment-rich zone.
Yeah. Brian, you've mentioned this already, right? So can I go ahead and
talk about my experience? You're easily the highest on it.
What say that again?
Oh, you're definitely the highest on this one.
All right, so just like with Great Gatsby, this is a book that I read. I think this one was even earlier. I want to say eighth grade for this one. And over the years, always thought, yeah, this is a fun book. But I never went back and read it until we finally did it in 2023. Well, guess what? As a big fan of the TV show Lost, I'm sure you can imagine that as I'm seeing how Lost is drawing some inspiration from this classic book, it just made me like the book even more. I still felt disturbed even as an adult with some of the stuff that was happening. So overall, my experience with this book, very positive.
And maybe some of my children that Matt would have brought up was going to bring up Lost as a reason for liking Lord of the Flies.
I mean, how could you not? I'm even doing a Lost. I'm doing a Lost rewatch right now, everybody. So feel free to find me over at patreon.com/thescifichristian for the Lost Report with Matt Anderson.
This book is just trying to not swear. It's basic. It's basic. Like, everything about it is just basic. Like, we talked about Great Gatsby being for high schoolers. I think you hit it right. This is the same type of symbolism bait for middle schoolers. Not a lot to dig into. I'm not a fan. It's like, I don't dislike the book, you know, but there's nothing terribly profound it has to say. We're going to eat each other or whatever they do.
I agree, but I had really low expectations going into it. And so by the end of it, I felt fond of it. It's fine. It's all right.
It's fine.
All right. Number four.
Closing in, everybody.
Wow. Number four.
Love my top four. Like any of these.
Yeah.
Any of like my top four here, solid as can be.
Yeah. Yeah,
mine. I don't remember. I like, before we go on.
Okay,
I'm just stunned, Matt. You didn't like Heart of Darkness, and yet it's in your top four. What is happening?
You're right.
Just, anyway,
just wait until you find out.
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay. We still don't get to talk about this book. In fact, am I the first one to mention this one? My number four is The Heart of the Matter.
You are the first one to mention
it. I mean, I've mentioned it multiple times.
Really good.
I do think that's Matt's number one.
I think you're right. Yeah.
This is very high on my list. Very, very high.
We'll get there.
Top one or two.
All right. And I have it for the other one we haven't mentioned, Tristram Shandy.
Mm-hmm. Love that book. All right. Friends that are joining me, Ben and Brian. Are we ready to talk about To Kill a Mockingbird? Because that's my number four.
Do we have Heart of Darkness in your top three?
I still haven't.
Didn't like the book. Did I like bully you into giving it a 5-star rating? That's how it's at the top.
Just wait.
Didn't like it.
Yeah, that is why. Okay, this is.
Are we ready? Did you?
We can.
Don't read the review. Don't read my review ahead of time, Ben. Just wait until you. Let's get there.
All right.
So, To Kill a Mockingbird. Are we ready to talk about that?
Well, we can because it's my number three. I'm the highest on this one. I can't believe this is this high, actually.
It's really good. And I wouldn't have said that a year ago, but it's really, really good. I love it.
I also loved it. Brian, you have it at three?
Yeah. Yeah, I liked it. I think I liked it fine in high school. And then maybe, again, had low expectations. and thinking it was maybe overrated and another one of those books to just give high schoolers. But no, it was really good. Definitely like a it's interesting of the character Boo Radley that's sort of the monster in the house that turns into the protector kind of character. Is a pretty powerful image. So
yeah,
that was good.
Yeah, you know, and that was exactly my opinion up until we reread it, was that this was in the same category as Gadsby and Lord of the Flies and Scarlet Letter as symbolism bait for students. And it is, except that it also has a deeper layer to it, which is the telling it from the perspective of Scout. And then what you get is this sort of coming of age thing and her interpretation of profound events outside of her purview. And so I think there are layers to this book and layers to the writing where it does function as that racism is bad, you know, symbolism layer. Okay. And then the high schoolers get that right there, you know, 300-word essay, and then then go about their business. But then there are deeper layers to it. And I think that's what I found this time around and really, really loved.
Yes, I reading my review for this one had me wondering, do I care more about an author's ability to create great characters or do I care more about the narrative that the characters are in? Mm. And I think I might fall on the character side. But I'm interested to hear what you guys think about that, because I can see how much, as I've been reading through my different reviews that we're talking about for the books here tonight, I often do focus in on the characters that are created. And so I complimented Harper Lee's character work here. She created multiple characters that the readers cared about, and we're intrigued by them. We want to know more about them. So, story, good, characters, great. Where do you guys land on that? Do you care more about the characters in a narrative or the narrative in general?
Well, there's more than one way to succeed, I think, and that you can have character-based works, you can have plot-based works, and then you can have neither. Like, I know it's not a novel, we're talking novels, but take something like Tree of Life. That's neither plot nor character based. It is idea based. It's beauty based. It's, you know, about kind of getting into that profound layer. So I think that, you know, that it's an area where preferences can come in for that, but you can have profound works that are full of great character work, and then ones that are have forgettable characters but are great for other reasons.
Yeah. All right, Brian.
Yeah,
I think we're ready.
Let me weigh in real quick there. I think when you look broadly, like you're saying, like if you include film or you include music, there are different ways to make something art, I guess, to make something deep and profound. With fiction writing, I think that characters are there to take part in a plot. Like, you can't have just characters without a plot. So I think I would say the characters are there to serve the plot, and that's how you encounter the characters, is through the plot. So I would have to say plot, it has to be more important, but I get what you guys are saying too.
All right, we're entering the top three, Brian.
Right.
Well, so he had Kill a Mockingbird.
That was three. Right. So Ben's three.
Art of the Matter.
All right. Well,
here we are.
You guys, if you had asked me what my number two, I know we're on three, but if you had asked me what my number two was as I looked over this book list, I was certain I knew. But I was surprised to find out that no, the one I thought was number two is actually number three. So right now I'm going to mention The Life and Opinions of Tristram Shandy.
Gentlemen. There's no way that you liked Heart of Darkness more than Tristram Shandy.
I just love Tristram Shandy so much. Are we ready to talk about it?
No,
I haven't Brian mentioned it.
Okay.
This is the flaw in the never change my ratings, Matt.
Yes. Matt, this is crazy.
Rank based on ratings.
I love that. Can't wait to talk about it. What's your number two, Brian?
My number two is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
All right,
we're going to
finally talk about that one.
This is such a great book.
It is so
Matt, good. You have to watch the movie.
Yeah, I have to watch the movie, but Brian's got to talk about it first because he has it the highest.
Oh, that's true. I showed Melissa the movie. She still needs to read the book. The movie is also really good. This one, I think this one's underrated. I think more people should be given this one, because this one is a pretty easy read, and it's got unreliable narrator maybe, or like surrealism maybe, and people like that kind of stuff. But no, this is like one of the most powerful Christ figures in a most un-Christ-like character, maybe.
Yeah.
Which I didn't notice until he takes 12 people on a boat, and then I finally realized, okay, I see what you're doing, Ken Kesey.
Yeah, that's actually a great subgenre, though I can only think of one other example of un-Christ-like Christ figures.
Mm. Are you thinking of Heinlein?
Oh, no. Okay, I can think two other examples.
Well, what's the Heinlein one? Who's the good?
Stranger in a Strange Land.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't read that yet.
Oh, that's mostly starts as sex cult. I'm thinking of Severian in Book of the New Sun.
Oh. I really need to do that deep dive.
But since we're talking about book, I just started The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Have you guys read that book?
I have read that.
I have also read it.
Brian?
That was fine.
Also behind. I'm in the middle of it, so let's talk about it some other day.
Okay.
It's a little more of a sermon than a...
Yeah, any other thoughts for
you? Oh, yes. I do have for one blurb. Yes, I thought this book got better and better as it went on.
Yeah.
It was good. I think it's better and better and better. So I just like you said, when you said you think it's maybe underrated by people, even though it's well known, I agree. That's exactly what I feel. I think people know it's good, but they don't consider it as good as they should.
Agreed. All right, my number two, Infinite Jest.
Nice.
I mean, we talked about this one a lot. We probably don't need to talk about it too much more, but boy, do I love Infinite Jest. And I'm very glad that even though, Matt, what did you have this, like 12 on your list? Yeah. Very low.
Very, very low. I mean, it was
shockingly low. Even though I'm pretty sure you enjoyed it more than Heart of Darkness.
This was number nine. This was number nine for me.
But you know,
that broke the top 10.
I'm glad you read it. And I'm glad that you at least found it occasionally or often.
No, often.
Often very funny.
Yeah, because that one movie was sometimes very funny. This book was often very funny. Wow. There's nothing more I could say about it. That is the number one best thing about it, is how funny it is.
I don't know if that's the number one best thing about it. I think the number one best thing about it is that it's a deeply moving exploration of characters struggling with addiction and also with dashes of surrealism in there. But I obviously love this book. We've spent hours talking about it. Brian,
I think we may have five or six episodes on it because we did two episodes before I even read it in the main feed.
Yep.
We did like an intro to Infinite Jest and an Infinite Entertainment episode. I found this out after the fact.
Yeah.
And then we did some Infinite check-ins. And then finally, the final review. So we talked a lot about Infinite Jest.
Yeah.
Ryan?
Yeah. So this was a book that I had heard of probably like a decade ago and decided I did not want to read it. Did not sound like something I would enjoy. And then last year, read, because I knew you guys were going to do this on the podcast, I read David Foster Wallace essay, one of his really long essays with lots of footnotes, and hated it. Just could not stand it. It's called Host. It's about a
talk radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Okay. So I might like it going back and reading it now, but I just thought it was pretentious and just
I didn't believe this book wasn't pretentious.
No. Yeah. Fair. But yeah, so I really thought there's a chance I was going to hate this, and just really slowly came around, ended up being my number five. I don't know. This one, maybe this should have been higher on the scale of how much I've thought about the book, or how much I've gone and read about the book, or how much I've flipped back to the beginning of the book while reading or after finishing and going back and reading a little bit at the beginning. So I don't know. This is one that is just kind of, I think, has a corner of my brain now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it does have that effect. It gets under your skin, and it's there's a really difficult thing to do in storytelling that I kind of love, which is where the ending isn't the ending. Meaning the final pages of the book are a dead end that pushes you further back into it. I was thinking of that this last weekend, rewatching The Shining, as I always do over Halloween, and the final shot of The Shining being this picture that shows Jack Torrance at an Overlook party, you know, 50 years earlier in the movie's timeline. And people get to the end of The Shining and they think, like, it feels like it's supposed to be a big reveal, but it's not. You know, it's another clue that thrusts you further back into the film to try and decipher it.
Do you know what that clue means? Like, could you?
I have interpretations of it, but I don't want to get sidetracked on The Shining. My point is that it's they both have that same effect of their ending isn't the ending. It feels like it should be, but it actually, to decipher it, you have to go further back into the material.
Yeah, did you tie that into the Gospel of Mark? That you guys just
you could argue the Gospel of Mark very much has a, and I have argued that it's a similar labyrinthine structure.
My only thoughts more on Infinite Jest is, or I guess my thoughts are this. I guess I'd have to thank you, Brian, and you, Ben, for pushing me along, because both of you guys are like, when are you going to finish it? I'm waiting for the review.
Right.
So, Brian, you finished it months ago just waiting for me. Because we said we were reading it. It took me 10 months.
I didn't finish it too much ahead of you. I think it took me eight and a half months.
Okay. Well, but that's great.
I read it gradually, which I think maybe was a better experience.
In this case, it wasn't peer pressure. It was encouragement. Like, attaboy.
Peer reading. Encouragement.
Yeah, peer encouragement. All right, let's move on.
To your number two. Which inexplicably...
Wait, are you sure? Because Infinite Jest was your number two?
My number two. Yep.
All right. I'm going
to
give you my...
Inexplicably.
This has to be Heart of Darkness, my number two,
and then I'm going to read my like 2-3 sentence review. All right? So no reactions until
your
I tell
book
you.
You didn't like.
Number two, Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. Now, when I looked at these books before I looked at each of the ratings, because my method for creating this list tonight was Brian sent us the books. I line them all up, and I just kind of took a glance, like, okay, I got a sense of where these are going to go.
Yeah.
Then I went straight to Goodreads and wrote down my star numbers by each one. And I was surprised to find, out of nowhere, Heart of Darkness, which I would have guessed would be very low, had 5 stars. And here's the review. I had mixed... Ready, Ben? Okay, here we go.
I'm ready.
I had mixed feelings on this book. I know that it is a classic, but I didn't personally love the experience while listening to the audiobook. I was able to talk with a friend, that's Ben, I was able to talk with a friend about it, and this friend loves the book. He talked about the book's positive attributes and pressured/convinced me to give this a 5-star rating. And that's my whole review, and now it's my number two.
But it's not! Can you honestly look at these 14 books, and I love Heart of Darkness. It's a worthy number two. But can you honestly look at these 14 books and say this was your second favorite, or the one you consider the second best, or however objective or subjective metric?
You may remember we did a 2-part deep dive on the Heart of Darkness. And so those deep dives do help bring something out of it for me that maybe I missed it originally. So I don't think it would have been as low as you think. I don't think it would have been like number 14 out of 14. But no, I mean, love
that place is reserved for Blood Meridian.
No, that's not an inferior.
No, you put Blood Meridian at 14.
No, that was 13. I'm looking at my list. It was second from the bottom. But anyways, all that to say, obviously Tristram Shandy is my number two on this list. It's obvious. I love that book. I think about it all the time.
So, overrule yourself.
I can't.
You can.
I have a system that I've used
for
years.
You have free will.
I have a system I've used for years. And to stay true to my past self, I have to keep moving forward.
Your system, and I say this with lots of love, sucks.
So does anybody else want to mention Heart of Darkness?
I want to talk about your system a little more. Isn't it contradictory?
That's the real Heart of Darkness.
It's contradictory to say that after you read it and after you rated it, then you did the deep dive and you appreciate it more, but you can't, like a deep dive can't affect how you're going to rank it on this, or you waited to rate it until after you did the deep dive?
I often write my reviews on Goodreads, even though I date it correctly, I'll write them after Ben and I discuss them. So like when we did The Odyssey, I kind of had an idea of what I might write, but, or Infinite, same thing. I had an idea, but I didn't actually write it until we had done our discussion.
Yeah, so you changed your rating of it after. It wasn't right when you read it. We're just saying extend that window. We're just saying extend that window.
Like a year? Like 2 years?
Like to the rest of your life.
Yeah, you're life. You're free. Actually, at any moment, you can say, I gave this 5 stars and I do not like it.
If I want to re-rate something, I have to reread it or rewatch it if it's a movie. I can't re-rate it months later. That's just how I do it. So for movies, if I'm like, this is a 5, but I only have it as a 4, I'll watch it again, see if it's actually a 5, and maybe it is. I feel fine about my system.
You shouldn't.
Does anybody else want to talk about Heart of Darkness?
I love Heart of Darkness. What a great book.
5 stars for you?
Oh, yeah, 5
same,
stars.
Same.
Brian, did you watch Apocalypse Now with us?
I still have not. Still got to get to that one.
Oh, my gosh, Brian.
I'm sorry.
I'm ashamed of everyone.
You know, I want to say this. I am rewatching Lost, as I mentioned. And there's a character named John Locke, who you both know. And he does mannerisms of Colonel Kurtz in Lost that I didn't pick up on during my initial viewing.
That's interesting.
And later in the show, I know that one of Sawyer's nicknames for Locke, one of the many nicknames, is Colonel Kurtz.
There you go.
So
also bald.
It looks like it's bald and mannerisms.
Yeah.
So go check out my Lost podcast, The Lost Report with Matt Anderson.
All right. So number ones, we have 3 different number ones.
Yeah.
So that's quite exciting, I think.
It is.
Oh, and let me say, to plug your deep dive again for Heart of Darkness, I did not like this at all the first time I read it, and I got more out of it this last time.
Heart of Darkness?
Yeah. So it was my 6. It's really good. So yeah. I'm not saying books that I have rated lower are not good. I'm saying I don't get them.
Yeah.
All right.
So, and sometimes that's the case with classics, is yes, that they do require multiple passes or listening to someone who loves them. I love to do that with books I feel like I didn't get.
Hey, Brian, I'm just looking at your reviews. Do you tend to write a review but not give a star rating?
Yeah,
that's,
we've talked like about, that's my thing.
Discussion the last 2 years.
I don't do star ratings anymore.
Because I can see somewhere you write, so 4 stars, you know, like you might in your review mention how many stars you give it, but you don't literally plug in the stars.
So that was you're talking about my Heart of Darkness review from 2020.
That's
I did rate back then at some point between maybe 2021. I stopped 2022.
So did you have to go back and undo all your stars?
No, I just leave them on there. They're on Goodreads. You can go see what I used to rate stuff.
Oh, I can't believe you're missing your stars. How do people even know you?
How are you even surviving?
Well, they can read my review or they can talk to me. Then they can know.
I did think about, here's a sad thought for us, like us here and then listeners who we've gotten into Goodreads or Letterboxd. Let's just say, for whatever reason, those sites go down. We don't own them. We don't own our reviews. Just think of I've been using Goodreads since 2011, Ben even longer. I've been using Letterboxd since 2014. Others even longer. What if that just was a shutdown and we lost all of that?
Well, so first of all, you do own your reviews. You own your data.
Yeah, but let's just say unexpectedly shut down and you didn't have time to export it.
I'm fairly certain there are laws about that.
Laws about websites that we don't own?
No, absolutely. Like, yes, there are.
They have to give us a warning? You've written things here. You might want to.
It's just like I think legally. That's why they have those export features. They are legally required to give you copies of your data.
I've never heard that. So I've never exported anything out of Goodreads. Can you export out of Goodreads?
I don't know about Goodreads. Yes, I imagine you can. But like Letterboxd, you can. Just like Facebook, if you want to download all of your data off of Facebook, you have the right to do that.
I didn't know that. Okay. Good conversation. All right.
Anyway.
where were we even?
We're ready for number ones.
And Brian's gonna kick us off.
Yeah, with The Life and Opinions of Tristram Shandy, Gentleman.
Oh, it's so good.
Yes, just reading the title just brings a smile to my face. I do love this book.
I also love it.
And
I think I had it the lowest at 4, but
yeah,
that's not excitement on it.
Man, Brian, you should go first because you have it the highest, but I have a lot of things to say about it.
Yeah, I think if we tried to make like an objective top 14 or we did maybe if at the end you guys will do like a top 100 or a top 10 objectively best or something like that
without stars
Without stars.
Without stars.
That would be fun. Like, just look at the books and just use my own mind.
Oh, you should do a starless...
Top 100.
Just a starless...
So first make it, and then go and see, according to my stars, what I've given it.
So next time we do this, we can have four lists. We can have Matt's starless.
No, let's not do that. Let's do it when it's 100.
All right.
Yeah, but I think, like, what I'm trying to say is, I'm not saying Tristram Shandy would be at the top if you did an objective greatest books list, but it's such an oddball. It's such a unique shining star in the firmament of literature. It's something you wouldn't expect to exist from, when was this, 1600s? Late, early 1700s? Like,
no, yeah. 1759.
Okay. Mid 17. So, I don't know. I just was completely surprised by it. It's such a, the style of humor where you have something very silly, but you take it very seriously, I think is maybe my favorite sense of style of humor. And that's like, and this book with a, that's this book.
And the window pane scene.
Yes.
Just the icing on the cake.
Oh, have you guys seen the movie of Tristram Shandy?
What? There's a movie?
There is, but there's a twist on it, isn't there, Brian? Yeah. I haven't watched it, but I saw you review it recently.
It is worth watching. It's not a Hollywood film. Movie. It's a like a BBC, so a lower budget. But so the twist, Matt, is it's a movie about a company making a movie adaptation of Tristram Shandy. So you still have the like kind of fourth wall breaking, like postmodern kind of meta stuff. There's just they still have all the like many of the funniest scenes, like his dad not getting to name his son Tristram and like chasing the maid through the house, and she can't remember, or she does remember Trismegistus, but the priest doesn't believe her that could actually be the name. The windows that you mentioned, Ben, Uncle Toby's so good.
Yes. Uncle Toby, so good,
amazing.
Almost every time I'm chasing a fly in the kitchen, I think of Uncle Toby.
A cock and bull story is the title of the movie. It looks like,
yes,
I will check it out. That
wow.
I also love Tristram Shandy. Very funny, great meta level humor. I think everything you said, Brian, summed it up perfectly. I love this book.
A few years back, Ben and I read for the podcast Don Quixote. And Ben had, of course, read it before. This is my first time. And I just remember being blown away by how funny it was, even though that book was from the 1600s. We get here to this book from 1759. Same thing. The humor is so good. Mm. And then I didn't even know this. It reminded me as I'm reading it of Don Quixote. And I would find out later, probably from you, Ben, that it was inspired by Don Quixote. So same exact style. Man, I love this book. I mean, my number one will mention soon. I love them both for different reasons. Number one for me was really moving. This one just makes me happy. I'm just so happy this book exists.
Well, we all love Brian's number one. And we all love Matt's number one. But my number one is Blood Meridian, and you're both wrong. This book isn't just the best of the 14 we just read. It is one of the great American novels. Our friend and fellow marathoner Aaron Rainey just finished it recently, mm-hmm. and declared it the second best American novel after Moby Dick.
Wow.
And I'm hard pressed to disagree with him. And indeed, thematically the two are aligned. I do think that this is a book that deserves the deep dive treatment, because I think if you don't get it, and there's no shame in not getting it, but if you don't get it just reading it, I think it's one that will be deeply served by diving into the symbols and ideas, the careful labyrinthine qualities to it, which we talked about some of those, I think. At least I think we did, about how like the book divides perfectly in half and like physically divides, like the middle page. you can perfectly divide this book, and then on either side there's recurring words and recurring phrases that only happen once, and they parallel each other almost exactly. The book is a masterpiece, and I love Cormac McCarthy, but what he did with this is so far head and shoulders above even his other great works in his bibliography. It is stunning how good this book is, how brutal it is, how it hits on the themes that make the great American novels, of obsession, of violence, of the epic quality of the West. I adore this book, and I can't wait to, at some point when we finally have room in our deep dive calendar, to go through it in excruciating detail, because that is what it deserves.
You know, my first impressions of this book are, number one, we're getting a story set in an apocalyptic future.
Yeah.
It has sort of an Old West-like style or setting. And then, number two, definitely something supernatural is happening. And then I, because Ben always tells me, just read the Wikipedia article. It will help you. It doesn't matter if you get spoiled. So I decided to go ahead, because I was having, even though I kind of identified the setting, I thought I should just read some of the spoilers and understand more of what exactly is going on. I read it, and it says historical novel set in the past. And all of a sudden I realized, okay, well, my first 2 points, something set in an apocalyptic Old West and a supernatural, both wrong.
I don't agree with you.
But then we did our review, and you came back after we didn't do a deep dive, just our regular review, and you say, no, it's possible. There are interpretations that there's something supernatural happening. But now, to my first point, you do think it's in the past, right? Not the future.
Yes, but it is apocalyptic.
Okay. I guess I meant, like, when I first started reading it, I'm thinking dystopian future, this Old West setting, sort of like the Dark Tower.
Yeah.
But that's not it. It's history, but you think...
Yeah. But I think, and Brian, I'll let you get in just a second, but I think this is a mistake, and I'm not trying to be...
Here we go, listeners. Buckle up.
Buckle up, buttercup. I think this is a mistake when interpreting great works, especially ones that have a dash or more surrealism in them, which this certainly does. And Moby Dick does, too. Moby Dick, let's take that for a second, because I think we can maybe see that easier because we all love it. At least I think you did, Brian, if you didn't, just... come along with the ride.
That's my favorite book.
There you go.
Of all time?
I mean, I guess I have to put the Bible higher, but...
Yeah, Bible. All right.
Moby Dick has a definite historical context. There was a whaling industry. You can go to the New Bedford Whaling Museum. It's a real industry. Yeah. There are historical things described in Moby Dick. But yet, in the course of the narrative... the narrative folds time and space in on themselves, meaning that Moby Dick becomes a narrative that fundamentally transforms the nature of time and space in our understanding of what's happening in the novel. For example, Moby Dick is about hunting a whale, and Moby Dick is about killing a god. And Moby Dick pulls in biblical narratives. You know, think of the final chapter of Rachel weeping for her children. Mm. And so the lost women of Jerusalem and the exiles and all of this get folded in. It is the collapse of time and space into it. Another thing that does that, if I can get on my Catholic soapbox first, just a second, is the Catholic understanding of the Eucharist. Right? Like Catholics talk about the Mass as a real sacrifice. And a common criticism against us is you think that Christ is being re-sacrificed in every Mass. Wrong. We think that in the moment of the Eucharist, time and space folds in on itself in a way that goes beyond our comprehension. The same thing's happening in Blood Meridian. So Blood Meridian has a definite historical context. Even more, the judge is a historical character. Hmm. And he is the embodiment of the devil. He is a supernatural character. We are in a dystopian, post-apocalyptic, blighted landscape because the narrative transcends its context. That's part of what's so powerful about it.
Brian, do you agree?
Right. Right. Which is why, I saw a, I think it was probably a YouTube video or Yeah, probably a YouTube video. And the title was something like The Judge from
Blood Meridian.
Yeah, thank you. The judge from Blood Meridian is not the devil, and then was like talking about, I didn't even watch it, but like that's missing the point. That's not how you read literature.
Correct.
There could be a character that's where there's nothing supernatural in the plot, and yet there is also the layer of if you want to use the term archetype, where they've got this other layer of something on top of them. So it doesn't matter if in the plot of the of Blood Meridian he is the devil. He is the devil in the story at a different level. So I agree. And I think
even in the story though, like the historical character, the judge, is transformed into a supernatural being. I think there, even if we take the plot at face value, there's enough in there to suggest that he is more than human.
Agree. And that's very clear. I think it's very clear that it's like you're talking about symbolism. I would be I'll be really interested for your deep dive because I'm sure I missed a ton. But it is, you know, it's clearly like Dante's Inferno kind of walking through a hellish kind of landscape. I had it much lower because I think that kind of middle, most of the middle of the book was, I did not, I don't know, maybe I needed to read it quicker or take notes or something, but it was one where I couldn't really keep in my mind the structure of what was going on, and it seemed really, I guess, repetitive, and I couldn't distinguish, I guess, in my mind between, like, say, chapter 3 and chapter 7.
You're not wrong.
Okay.
And I'm actually going to argue that that's part of the parallel I would draw with Moby Dick. I'm going to say Moby Dick did it better. I mean, fine, I don't disagree. I mean, better is, we're talking about great books. But the same type of thing is at play. Like, I've talked with Moby Dick how if you look at a chart of the use of the first person pronoun in Moby Dick, like a histograph of that. Chapter 1, lots. Right. Chapter 2, so on and so forth. And then it fades and fades and fades. Same thing is happening in Blood Meridian. Who's the main kid? Well, right. It starts with, just like Moby Dick starts with, call me Ishmael. We have a intentionally echoed opening phrase of see the child, three words. So the kid is the main character of Blood Meridian, except then he fades into the plot. Mm. Both of these novels are playing with the idea of giving us a plot, giving us a character, and then letting that character disappear into a transcendent morass that is greater than them. And I think in Moby Dick, it's a combination of wonder and awe as well as terror. And in Blood Meridian, it's just this grueling hellscape of violence that marches on and on and on. And if you just cover that too quickly, like, you should feel the grind, you should feel the gruel, because that is what the characters, and the kid foremost among them, are disappearing into throughout the course of the novel.
Yeah, and I I believe you. I will say, like, you could, it still has to be, there's still more there, because like you could take a video camera to Mordor and have a 5-hour document, like 5-hour long shots of terrible torn up ground, and that's not art. Or like the guy that wrote a novel and didn't use the letter E,
right?
Like, very right. Impressive structurally, but also not great art. So I guess,
and I think there's a lot more going on there.
Yeah,
I mean, Cormac McCarthy is he's one of the great wordsmiths of all time. And even when the words are describing something brutal, he is absolutely a poetic writer. I think that, you know, now a year away from it, I'm not going to be able to give you specific examples, but we will get there for the deep dive.
All right, listeners, I'm going to take us on to my number one, which I think this is it, the last book
of this
the
is night. It.
By
Graham Greene.
Graham Greene, sorry. I'll skip past what I was going to say. It
barely nudged out Heart of Darkness for your heart.
This book not just my favorite book of this list. I think it's a favorite book, my favorite book that I've read in the last few years.
Wow.
Love the Heart of Darkness. Or the Heart of the Matter. Okay.
Matt put Heart of Darkness twice.
So good. The Heart of the Matter by Graham Greene. I'm just going to say a few words about it and then let you guys take it away too, because I feel like mine is just all praise, praise, praise. It's a book that's taking a look at this man's struggle with his desire to be good while also being tempted by sin. We see that he, like in the midst of this story, the author and the characters are examining faith. We're looking at the main character's belief in what God is like. And some of the most revealing lines about the character of God come at, towards the very end of the book. Mm-hmm. So you just see this book getting better and better as it's going. I couldn't stop reading it by the end. You listeners, you know I do mostly audiobooks. So I'm not saying they're reading the pages, but I was listening. That day I happened to be driving and listening to this book. I'm at the end. I'm at Target. I'm in the parking lot of Target. Instead of walking to Target, I wanted to give this book my full attention. I could see 10, 15 minutes left. I just sat there in the parking lot just to take in these last minutes, these last moments of the book.
Nice.
Yeah, I have a clear, like when I think of this book, I think of like the being in the, like hearing the very end of the story, just sitting in the Target parking lot, not being able to move. So that's my experience with it. 5 solid. So I couldn't give a stronger rating. I love this book.
Oh, you're spot on. It's was my number, wherever I put it, 3. I think I had it 3. Anyway, I had it high up. But it's a very defensible number 1. I also love this book. I have nothing negative to say about it. I think it's beautiful. It is profound. It is tragic. It's an overwhelming work is how I would describe it. And it starts off very simple. It's just this, you know, things spiral out of control. And then by the end of it, you're overwhelmed by what this character has put himself through because of the fundamental failure to see God as how God is. It's incredible.
Right.
Brian, you better say something good about it.
Yeah, it was my number 4. I think I only ticked it slightly down because of the first half, maybe. Maybe on reread. I wouldn't say that. The second half, though, just like the slow build-up to the climax where he knows he's in mortal sin and he takes Eucharist. Like, one of the scariest. Like, I haven't read any Stephen King passage or any horror novel scene, I don't think, that's scarier than that. Which maybe is an interesting... maybe let me tie in real quick with C.S. Lewis's Experiment in Criticism. I think you could ask, how could that be scary to a Protestant reading that? And I think if you ask that, then you're reading backwards, where C.S. Lewis says, we don't pull out from literature things that can relate to us. Instead, we surrender ourselves to the art.
Yes.
And we put ourselves into the characters. So that's the answer to that question, I think. How could you read something, or how could you read something by an atheist, someone would maybe ask, and be moved by it? I think that's the answer.
I think that's I wouldn't dispute that answer in the slightest, and absolutely. And I think that anybody who would make that criticism, like, oh, well, how can you as a Protestant relate to it that way, doesn't understand art. Just doesn't understand how to experience art. Doesn't understand that, you know, what you're doing when you're reading. And if that's all art is, then let's all just retreat to our collective Kirk Cameron corners and call it good. What an absurd way to approach it. So I completely agree with you, Brian.
As we close out this episode, something just hit me. It might feel like, wow, we're really making some ground, We just covered all the 10 rows again for the second time. So we did 12 the first time.
Yeah.
14 now. Mm.
Can we stick to 10 this time, do you think?
Well, not just that. I was just thinking.
We're already off track. We did Iliad and Odyssey.
Yeah.
Well,
for row 1. We can try to stick to 1 per row.
That's reasonable.
But even with those... 26, we have a ways to go before we finish the Bookbuster. So, listeners, we're in for the long haul.
We're getting our money's worth out of this.
Yeah, thing. Big time.
Especially if you just Brian, keep picking off the short.
This is also one of your episodes.
Yeah, if you just keep picking off all the short ones.
There's like a 7-volume novel in there.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yes.
Next year. So we have 74 more books to get to.
It'll be good.
Yeah, it'll be good. Brian, what are your closing thoughts? Out 10th one.
Okay, I think you should pick one in this next set of rows to read a paper copy of. And maybe look ahead and pick what that's going to be. But something like Tristram Shandy, I think the next time you guys reread that, you should pick up a paper copy.
That's good advice.
Yeah, there's something about like the, I mean, maybe that one specifically because it's the a lot with the medium of the book that he's playing with. But I think even something, Matt, like Infinite Jest, would be able to. And I know you wouldn't have been able to finish it so quickly, so maybe not a 1,000-page one. But maybe a shorter one, that you could, I don't know, with audiobooks for me, I find it's easy to let some passages kind of wash over me, which is good for some books and not good for other ones. So that's my challenge.
I will admit that that's true, and also say I could never maintain... Yeah. Like this type of list for the show if we didn't do audiobooks.
So one,
I hear what you're saying.
1 out of 10.
So I'd say I'm about 50-50 in terms of audio or Kindle/paper copy. If we're going to be really strict on paper copy, I have read Infinite Jest in the paper copy, and I also read Tropic of Cancer paper copy.
You would.
Yeah. I want to get up close and personal.
Underline your favorite parts.
Yeah. That's why I was taking pictures of the underlying book. I did do that, actually. It was so much fun.
Brian, you end 10 to 1, and then I'll end the Sci-Fi Christian.
Okay. Thanks for listening. If you actually got this far without reading these books, I'm really interested to know. Email us, tto@kozer.us. Or if you listen to it and you have read these books, let us know your list. And if you enjoyed our talk... Then join us for this next run through the book poster. That's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson. I'm Ben DeBono.
I'm Brian Cope.
I'm Ben DeBono.
And this, you've been listening to 10 to 1. I'm going to do Great Expectations on audiobook. I think of the last of those 14, I don't think I did any audiobooks.
Wow. You know what I just realized, Brian? I've already taken your challenge because I read both the Iliad and the Odyssey in paper copy.
Hey, that's great.
I'm done. So,
you did it.
So put your judgment aside because I have read real paper, just like the old days.
Wow, what the dickens?